It is Thursday, May 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump criticizes the appointment of a special prosecutor to investigate possible links between his 2016 campaign and Russia. Iranian voters prepare to go to the polls, and former Fox News founder Roger Ailes dies. We look at his controversial career. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday condemned the appointment of a special counsel to investigate his campaign's links to Russian interests in last year's presidential election. On Twitter, he called it the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history. Trump complained that a special prosecutor had never been named to investigate what he categorized as all of the illegal acts that took place in the campaign of his Democratic challenger, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and the administration of his predecessor, former President Barack Obama. Trump was responding to Wednesday's appointment of Robert Mueller, the former director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to lead the probe into whether any of Trump's aides criminally colluded with Russian officials in an effort to boost Trump's chances of winning. I spoke with Mark Rozelle, the dean of the Schar School of Politics and Government at George Mason University in Virginia. I asked him whether the frequent comparisons to the Watergate scandal are accurate.
We don't know if it's a Watergate-level situation at this point. I know many are making that comparison, but we still have to find out the facts. And, of course, what makes the Watergate comparison so intriguing is that ultimately it was determined that the President of the United States had tried to obstruct justice and he was part of a conspiracy to cover up wrongdoing at the highest levels of his administration. So if that were the case here, and if the Congress and the House of Representatives particularly was able to put together a majority coalition to vote for impeachment, you know, then I think the Watergate comparison becomes more apt. But at this early stage, we're still at the point of finding out what exactly are the facts and whether there is something there in this case.
Well, meanwhile, on Twitter today, President Trump called this the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history. Now, other presidents in the past have been strongly criticized, not just Richard Nixon, but also Bill Clinton during his impeachment, George W. Bush during the Iraq War. Further back, Harry Truman received a lot of critical comments. So it's not as though Mr. Trump is the, you know, first president to have this kind of criticism.
Well, that's right. And I think that was a very ill-advised tweet that the president sent out calling this a witch hunt. He has to give the appearance of full cooperation, nothing to hide, let them investigate, they won't find anything. That should be the message rather than sending out angry tweets and calling this a witch hunt. This is just a normal part of the public law and separation of power system in the United States. The chief executive is held accountable for his actions, and that is done either by a legislative committee in Congress or by a special counsel or special prosecutor. And Donald Trump is not the first president to undergo this type of an investigation. And plenty of past presidents have survived, you know, much more, I think, serious investigations that ultimately occurred. Think of the Iran-Contra affair during the Ronald Reagan administration, for example, where the President of the United States ended up apologizing on national television for, you know, anything he may have done to have contributed to that scandal. So I don't think this is so unique to justify in any way the president's tweet suggesting that it's the biggest witch hunt of a politician in history. That's just completely ahistorical.
I guess, though, perhaps it's because this is occurring so early in his administration.
Right. Well, that's right. And that's what's unique here is that we're barely into the fourth month of the Trump presidency, and we have a potentially major explosive scandal unfolding, or maybe it's not going to be such a serious scandal. Again, we're trying to find out what the facts are in this particular case, but it is crippling to his administration in terms of his ability to get a message out on any of the issues that he and the Republican Congress care about. It takes away the focus from the policy agenda and puts the White House constantly on the defensive. All the news coverage is about this investigation and whether there was any wrongdoing. And meanwhile, the president and the Congress would like to be talking about infrastructure, tax cuts, health care reform, and the like, and they just can't get any traction on those issues.
Well, Robert Mueller, who has been appointed to be the special prosecutor or special counsel, he is a former director of the FBI and seems to have a lot of respect among both parties in government.
That's exactly right. I think that was a brilliant move to appoint someone in this role who is respected by people in both political parties, highly respected. And you can hardly imagine more positive reaction to somebody being put into suddenly this very high profile and ultimately it will become controversial role. And so I think that was a very good move because it puts to the side any intimation that the investigation has a partisan tinge to it, that this is, as the president calls it, a political witch hunt and they're just trying to get the president. People in political Washington know Mueller, and they know he wouldn't do that, and they respect his nonpartisanship, his professionalism, and they believe he will be focused singularly on getting the facts out and making sure that the country ultimately can move on from this episode.
That's Mark Rozelle, the dean of the Schar School of Politics and Government at George Mason University. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, some breaking news right now in New York's famed Times Square that a car has run into a group of pedestrians there. Reports that at least one person has died, as many as 19 have been injured. In recent years, large parts of Times Square, have been made pedestrian only. And one of the images that we're seeing across social media is this image of this maroon sedan balanced atop one of those concrete posts around Times Square that have designed to keep cars out and pedestrians safe. That appears to be the car that ran into those folks. Now, whether this was an accident or terrorism remains to be seen, and that's where a lot of the discussion centers on social media. A lot of people immediately thinking to incidents in Nice, France, in Berlin, in London, where cars have been used as weapons, hoping that that's not the case here, but authorities are continuing to investigate that in New York. Sad news also from the music world. One of the pioneers of grunge rock died unexpectedly, Chris Cornell, who was the frontman of the band Soundgarden and Audioslave. In fact, the band Soundgarden that he was the lead singer for was performing last night in Detroit, Michigan, and just hours after that performance, he was found dead. So lots of fans posting their tributes, including photos from that concert last night, his last performance. Among the fans tweeting out Sir Elton John, he said he was shocked and saddened by the sudden death of Chris Cornell, a great singer, songwriter, and the loveliest man. So lots of fans, famous and non-famous, reaching out and offering their support on this really shocking death in the music world. And another death, I know you're going to be talking about this later on in the show, Roger Ailes, the founder of Fox News, died unexpectedly this morning at 77 years old. He had faced charges of sexual harassment in recent years, very controversial figure. He had his beloved fans and his very strong critics on either side of the political spectrum. Fox News tends to take a more conservative angle. But I think regardless, one of the comments that we're seeing across social media, regardless of the politics and what you thought of him, he changed the face of U.S. media, for better or worse, with the creation of Fox News.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. As we heard, at least one person is dead as a car slammed into pedestrians in New York City. The Trump administration begins NAFTA renegotiation process. China and Southeast Asian nations agree on a code of conduct framework for the South China Sea. And the presidents of France and Russia discuss international collaboration in their first call. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new 25-year global study suggests cardiovascular disease is now the cause of one-third of all deaths throughout the world. The study reports that in 2015, nearly 18 million people worldwide died from this family of illnesses, which includes heart attack, congestive heart failure, coronary artery disease, as well as stroke. More than 400 million individuals globally are living with a cardiovascular disease. The report lists people living in Eastern Europe, Central Asia, the Middle East, South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Oceania have the greatest number of cardiovascular deaths. The study also indicated the 20-year decline in CVD deaths in countries such as the United States, Australia, Japan, and those in Western Europe have begun to ease off and plateau. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Roger Ailes, the former CEO of Fox News, dies at the age of 77. We look at his controversial career. Iranian voters go to the polls Friday to choose among four candidates for president, with a focus on the two leading choices, 68-year-old incumbent Hassan Rouhani and 56-year-old hardline cleric Ibrahim Raisi. During Mr. Rouhani's first 4 years, he guided the country out of its isolation and reached an international agreement designed to cap Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. Wednesday, the Trump administration decided to extend sanctions waivers for another 6 months. But Washington also imposed new unrelated sanctions targeting Iranian defense officials, a company, and a Chinese network involved in advancing Iran's ballistic missile program. The last day of campaigning was Wednesday, and Ayatollah Ali Khamenei denounced the heated rhetoric as unworthy of the Iranian nation. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Indiana University analyst Hussein Banai if the election is a referendum on the nuclear deal.
It started that way, but as the campaign got underway, frankly, once again, the contradictions of the Islamic Republic took center stage, meaning that the Republican versus the Islamic side started clashing yet again. And I think that public uses these occasions every 4 years to really highlight the Republican aspects of the Constitution and to push the ruling elite to hear their dissatisfactions with various things going on in society. And this time around, in fact, the surprise was that the hardline candidate, Ibrahim Raisi, who has a very, shall we say, colorful past. He was known as a hanging judge after the revolution. He sat on a committee that basically was a special court for the clergy, and someone who's never really had that much of a public profile. The public basically made the case that this is a referendum on restoring the hardline elements and aligning the presidency once again with the office of the supreme leader and that of the judiciary versus taking a more moderate reformist path.
Can you sense the Iranian public's mood going into this election? Is there a lack of jobs in Iran, and is there a desire for more change?
Yes. The economy is clearly a major background factor. The mood is a dire one. Anytime an incumbent runs for re-election in Iran, their support is expected to dip, and I don't think that's going to be any different this time around, although we'll see in the last couple of days the prospect of Raisi really winning the presidency has forced a lot of people to kind of wake up from their slumber and publicly put their support behind Rouhani. But there's no question that on the matter of the economy, Rouhani has been less successful than, let's say, on the foreign policy front, where he managed to get a nuclear deal and to lift some sanctions and to open relations with Western European corporations and governments. But those have not translated into jobs, and they are unlikely to translate into any kind of major economic boom anytime soon because of the way in which Iran's economy is structured. A lot of it in the hands of not just the state, but really invisible corporations and networks of patronage that operate in the underground economy that it would be very difficult to reform without the support of some key stakeholders within the Revolutionary Guards and obviously the office of the supreme leader. So that is expected to remain a disappointment.
That's Hussein Banai of Indiana University. According to the Associated Press, more than 1 million Iranians are eligible to cast ballots in the U.S., where 55 polling stations will be open, the largest number outside of Iran. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world, and you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Former Fox News CEO and co-founder Roger Ailes died Thursday morning at 77 years old. That's according to the news organization. Ailes spent 20 years as the head of Fox, but he was removed last year amid claims of sexual harassment against him. I spoke with Nikki Usher, assistant professor at George Washington University's School of Media and Public Affairs, and I asked her why Fox News became so successful.
I mean, I think Fox News was successful for a lot of reasons, but I think that Roger Ailes was a huge part of that. He understood from the get-go better than anybody else how to tap into partisanship and create politics as entertainment. Now, he certainly wasn't the first person to think about this. There's been a long history of partisan broadcast, starting with radio even in the 1930s and 1940s. So this isn't sort of a brand new invention, but what he was able to do was take advantage of a time when people were finally at a massive penetration of cable into their homes and launch a network that portended to do something interesting and different with a different style of programming than other news organizations. I think that Fox's reliance on secondary analysis by talking heads set in motion some of what we see throughout the rest of television.
And he was also known for, well, Fox, and I guess Ailes, was known for hiring very attractive women and had them dress somewhat, I guess you could say, skimpily.
I mean, there are a lot of problems with the way that Roger Ailes and folks at Fox treated women and objectified women. And I think Roger Ailes is credited with a below the podium shot that I think it might be called like the leg shot. But the point is that it's a specific camera angle that actually gives you a sense of the legs up of somebody on TV, which is a view that he created, and now it makes more sense to understand why. I mean, you know, Fox seems like it has been a toxic place for a lot of incredibly bright women, and I think for people starting out, it may be fun to feel glamorous, but I also think that there's a real danger to that, and I think that culture of objectification was one that Roger Ailes, we know, imparted.
Well, for a number of years, I guess you could say there were reports of that women were treated in a demeaning way working at Fox, until there was a lawsuit filed by Gretchen Carlson against Ailes, and she was able to succeed in this, but I'm sure by filing this lawsuit, that must have been rather scary because Ailes was, at that time, a very powerful person.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Gretchen was at a point in her career where she didn't really have anything to lose. I mean, this is sort of somebody who had a pretty strong background that she could make a difference because she was powerful and was somebody who was going to get listened to. What we don't know is we don't know how much of what was happening at Fox was just sort of swept under the table, either ignored by HR or something that was settled out of court. So we don't really know how bad it was, other than what's coming out of these lawsuits and women coming forward from Fox. I also think that to some degree, the past election really helped a lot of women understand what the boundaries of appropriateness were for their relationships and dealing with men in the workforce. And I think for better or worse, the Trump-Clinton matchup really brought to light the difficulties that women face when trying to be successful. And perhaps that's what paved the way forward for women at Fox to really start trying to change the culture.
And then I guess one account that I read, I guess it was the account in Vanity Fair, that the sons of Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox, basically were instrumental in finally forcing Ailes out.
Well, you know, I think both of the Murdoch brothers are a bit more moderate. They've hired Democrats as lobbyists here in Washington. We know that for a fact. They're also younger. You know, they aren't somebody who has been, they're not people who have, I forget how many times Rupert Murdoch has been divorced, but these are people who seem to have more stable personal relationships, if that gives us any indication of their relationships with women. But we also know that they are more moderate. I think that they understand the need for Fox to appeal to a younger demographic, because if Fox stays as it is, you know, those 65-plus viewers are eventually going to die. And so it needs to reach out beyond and think about innovating. And I think the change of guard is really important to that.
Nikki Usher, assistant professor at George Washington University School of Media and Public Affairs. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Defense Secretary Jim Mattis recently attended a defense ministerial in Denmark with members of the Global Coalition Against ISIS to discuss how to defeat the group. In a press conference following the meeting, Secretary Mattis said, "We're going to further accelerate this fight and to free the people currently suffering from Daesh's crushing occupation and our enemy's terror threat to Europe and beyond." Denmark's defense minister, Claus Hjort Frederiksen, described the effort to defeat ISIS as one of Denmark's highest priorities and agreed to substantially increase the country's defense budget to aid in the counter-ISIS campaign. ISIS has lost well over half its territory in Iraq and in Syria. In Afghanistan, the enemy has lost about two-thirds of its strength. Moreover, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani recently announced the death of Sheikh Abdul Hasib, the emir of ISIS Khorasan, an affiliate of ISIS in Afghanistan. "In our anti-ISIS campaign," said Secretary Mattis, "we are dealing that group one more significant blow with the loss of their leader." Secretary Mattis cautioned that the battlefield against ISIS is also a humanitarian issue, where innocent people live right now, sometimes forced to stay on the battlefield by ISIS. "We're going to do everything humanly possible to limit the suffering and any casualties among those innocent people," he said. "Once the ISIS threat is subdued," said Secretary Mattis, "the real work of rebuilding begins in order to prevent another terrorist group from filling the void." And how do we do that? "Bottom line is we've got to restore government services, and that means we all have to work together." "ISIS has done horrible damage," said Secretary Mattis. "That's why the U.S. is committed to working with its allies to defeat ISIS wherever it attempts to establish its roots."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.